Hello, this is Chris Parker with the Business Simplicity Podcast. I just had a wonderful conversation with Amory Demili from Destiny, Destiny for Service Providers. And we got, I think, pretty deep into a concept around how architecture, technical architecture, drives and creates culture, particularly in larger organizations that have a buy and build strategy. So, hey, Amory, why do you think this would be really valuable for people to listen to it?
I think it would be really valuable because at the end we face all the same challenge in that field, and so that here we are explaining a bit how we do it, and there was some success, and there will be some success which needs to come also. I hope that it will be interesting for everybody.
The Business Simplicity Podcast, where we learn about strategies and tactics to succeed through simplicity, with your host, Chris Parker.
And welcome back to the Business Simplicity Podcast. This is Chris Parker, and I'm having a conversation with Amory Demili from Destiny, and more specifically, Destiny for Service Providers. And Amory started working back in the mid-90s in telecommunications, and has been involved in some activities that have actually shaped the industry that we might get into, and has at least one patent that I know of in under his name, which is incredible stuff. I have been working with him for, I don't know, 2 to 3 years. I can't really find, and I consider him a wonderful friend. And sometimes we've been mentoring each other, challenging each other, and I'm just delighted to be able to pick his brain on something that really triggered me a couple of months back when he made the comment that architecture can create culture. And I was like, wow. So and that has just kept coming back to my mind, and I'm delighted that Amory is able to join us and talk about that. So Amory, before we get into how architecture can create or form culture, which I really want to dive down that rabbit hole, can you share a little bit about yourself and perhaps your new role as Chief Scientist Officer at Destiny for Service Providers? Can you just fill in the story there a little bit on what is the Chief Scientist Officer and what are you working on these days?
Yeah. Hello, everybody. First, perhaps. But yeah. So I was really wondering what it is when I had to bid the proposition. But now I understand, and I understand the value. So the goal is really about aligning everybody on a vision, on a technological vision, and with that, of course, the architecture is important. So to take care that we align on the architecture, so that's one of the role, and the other role is also to challenge the current roadmap with the new opportunities that brings technology, and also to take care that we don't only deliver some feature, but also enable us in order to be more efficient, to be on the state of the art of the technology. So the goal is not to have a new team which works on that, because we need to really make it through the teams which are in place. So I hope that my goal will be to talk with every teams and everybody in order that we can align on this and be more efficient and deliver a better product at the end.
Sounds like you'll be a little bit like the technology consciousness.
Yeah, this is the idea. The idea is that at the end we have a buy and build in Destiny way of making things, but it's not easy because everybody has his own culture, architecture, way of working, and all of these. So if we don't make something explicitly, it will not come Right, naturally and necessary,
Mm.
because everybody has needs to have a transparency on where we want to go and so on, and we need also to define this where we want to go together, for a specific, for the whole product set, not only for the product where I historically worked on, which was the Connect Me and the vision that we made together, in fact,
Yeah, we made together. Yeah.
when you were there, which was really great.
I think it's a maybe even a perfect role for you. Knowing your ability to see the future and create patterns and figure out how to exploit technologies pretty much before anyone even knows there's a question to be answered. You've already gotten there. Chief scientist officer. And maybe a little plug for myself is a role that I can imagine would be a lot of fun as a chief simplicity officer. So if there's anyone out there who's looking for a executive to come in and be the consciousness of simplicity, then give me a shout. Little context, Destiny, and you can learn more about that at DSTNY.com, is it's a Belgian-based organization, but they've got offices around Europe and also Egypt. It's in business communications. So if you have a business account with a local carrier and you have maybe a call recording or voicemail or call routing, it could very well be that Destiny is providing that service because they provide that through their own local carriers in a couple European countries, and they also resell that through other service providers. And very important is this is a private equity backed company with a buy and build strategy. So they buy either market position, but in Destiny's case, usually capabilities in the form of own IP. And the challenge, of course, is the humans that have made this IP, this technology, are always coming from a different place. And they have been solving slightly different problems for slightly different customers. And then the challenge is how do you sort of amalgamate that into a coherent vision and architecture? And I'm delighted to hear that Destiny has requested Amaury to be that consciousness, that chief scientist officer. So keep that in mind when we're talking, because it's a highly complex human and technological environment, like any buy and build company. And Destiny is definitely investing to resolve those things over time and add more and more value to their customers. So, Amaury, vision and architecture to create alignment for people to connect. I guess before we start talking about your vision of how to solve that, maybe unpack a little bit, like what kind of problems do you see that if you buy six or seven or eight companies that have different cultures and architectures, what are some of the patterns that cause waste and frustration? And I'm not necessarily talking only about Destiny, because these patterns I think you would find in almost any organization. So let's just kind of make that abstract that away into the generic. What sort of pain can people, experience if you don't do this work that the chief scientist officer will work on?
The main pain is an overlap. So there is an overlap on the product side, sometime, but normally when it needs to be mitigated, because normally we know why we are going together also. So there are a few things where we want to make better together. But still, for the people, one of the pain is to understand why we are together, and to really explain and align on a certain vision, that everybody accepts, because, like for the we have also different culture. We had also some different vision, and now we need to make it work together, on a new one. And also, this is one of the pains, is that there was some architecture, so Often we have all some technical debt in this company, but these are opportunities in order to be stronger together. And we have really seen it with the acquisition with ESCO and Telepo. ESCO was my former company, and Telepo was really a big company in the Nordics, which has millions of users. Is that we really can work on making things more on the top of the edge of the edge of the technology. So and we really seen that we make more progress in 2 years together than before. So there are some challenge, but there are some opportunities also. And I would say that indeed we are there. The challenge is that everybody needs to work together. So we need to align the culture. We need to understand each other. We need to actively work on certain topics together in order to see the advantage and to feel the advantage to work together. So these are really the normal things. And if we don't do something about that, but people like for other, they don't have necessarily the trust. And so you need to build this trust by working together. And they will even go in a kind of their own culture, because when you make this buy and build, in fact, it's, I mean, if you don't understand it, you will try to keep what you are knowing. And so in fact, making a try and build asks really investment in order to succeed. It's not like that we will keep like we have done before. Also, what is really one of the big problems is the customer base, because we have each of our own customer base, and at a certain time, if we need to make some more efficient product portfolio, yeah, you need to make some decision. The first time that we met together with Telepo, there was this "Kill Your Darling" kind of video, and it was really like, and we had to kill our darling at the school, because we will stop to use our telephony system, because it's a fact that in Telepo there are 4 million users, and it's really a great backend for the unified communication. So we need to kill our darling, but it's an opportunity to reposition ourselves, where what we
So,
have made is to reposition ourselves more on the UC client side. So
maybe to re-explain that for people who perhaps aren't familiar with the industry or the case, and this is a very deeply human journey that we went on together, and I think the success of it so far has been really down to the collaboration between you and the CTO in Sweden, who decided to, I would say, not accept blindly each other, but at least give the benefit of the doubt and to be open for tolerance. And when you buy a number of companies, and so you will at some point have duplication, overlap. And in your case, you had a core telephony system, which was being invested in, and a group of people that were incredibly passionate about it. They've been working on that for years. And there was an equal group of people up in Sweden that had built something else over the years. And that's not easy. Meaning, how can you tell one group of people that, I'm sorry, this thing that you've built with your blood, sweat, and tears over the last years is end of life now, all of a sudden? Of course, it's more complicated than all that. And that's where the whole concept of kill your darlings came up. And in this case, I think seeking connection and seeking to see the value of each other It became almost a hard but natural conversation to discover what should be killed as a darling and what should be invested in, and how can you, I guess, redirect or give people the opportunity to start contributing to different parts of the platform than maybe they normally would have. And for me, this is all just the human journey that takes time and care and openness. And for me, it was just one of the highlights to be part of that journey and helping out as I could. So and if you don't do this, if you don't go through this work, then you're going to have customers from all the different legacy companies that could be further confused. The products, maybe if you kept some products and didn't give them the proper investment, then the technical debt would get bigger. And over time, things would get worse. And so there is a sort of balance between making the hard decisions now, and sometimes you kick the can and say, hey, we'll make that decision later. So, architecture is culture. So every organization has a de facto architecture. And in this case, I'm mostly talking about technical architecture, but for me, a business design or business architecture also includes and should include what is the definition of customer, because that's something how you're designing your business and how do you define your product to meet the needs of that customer, and what's the organization to work on that product, and then there's the technical architecture. So for me, that, from an enterprise architecture, it's quite a holistic thing. So I'll let you define architecture yourself. And I'm curious, embracing and engaging people in the architecture discussion, how does that shape the culture?
Yeah, indeed, the architecture here, we talk more about the technical architecture, but there are three, I see three architecture, the one that you talk about the product and what is the customer. And for example, in Destiny for Service Provider, the technological entity, where I worked, we are really working for the service provider and we define the product. And then the second one, which keeps to be more important for the technological, is a bit the team topology, the architecture of the different teams. That's also very important, because it's all about the aspiration of each individuals and the teams, what they want to deliver and so on. And it's important to understand that there is a topology of there. There are specific teams which are more product teams. Product aligned teams which deliver directly to the customer, but they need to have support from, for example, platform teams, and which will build the back end and assure that the stability of the back end and that the back end gets new feature. So, and at the end, you have also enabler teams which can help you in going in more efficiency, like quality assurance, like DevOps and things like that, in order to really have the good practice and helps everybody. So this is one of the more technological way of the architecture. And then you have really what we normally name the architecture, which is the technical architecture. So we try to use from to set the context and what are the boxes. But after that, each of these boxes contracts, and it's important to define these contracts so that others can use it. This de facto exists, well defined on paper or not. Now that we are going more in a bigger corporation like D4SP, it's more and more important to really document it in order, because it's like a present what you have made to the other, because you want that it's used, and it's important to document this how you want that people are using, and customer, but perhaps other teams is using your product. And so yeah, each of these, it's a de facto also culture in each and enterprise. You will have really more customer focused where culture where you really take care of each individual customer, or you have more product kind where or platform where you want to deliver a platform as a CPaaS more. Yeah, there is a de facto culture. But the fact is that as we are going to this buy and build process, the best things is to take really that concrete and to try to brings the most transparency about what is the aspiration of each of these teams and which benefits. Then we can talk about overlap in good and consciousness way. And yeah, try to focus when it's possible, but it needs to be agreed by everybody at a certain point.
I think that if I jump in and maybe express this in slightly different words. So imagine you had five companies who were all building technology for a similar but slightly different type of customer. And these people had succeeded through focus and perseverance and working as a small team, very entrepreneurial. And they had to create their technology as a standalone solution in order to win market share. Then you combine them all together from five different places. And what you're asking these people to do is change their mindset from individual, very entrepreneurial focus, get their own job done, to force them into a collaborative space to have the conversation to say, wait a second, and let's use the previous example. Wait a second, you have some really incredible, say, front-end technology that users can use, and we need to now make that work on a different back-end solution. And so the fundamental design requirements of some of this technology even changes. I mean, it needs to be supportive of components, modules in the future that they might not even know. And in some cases, they need to actually use different backend systems. So this is a human change and a technological change. And doing that all while keeping your customers happy.
Yeah, that's the difficulty.
Which is like sometimes you wonder, like why do people say yes to this stuff? It's absolutely bonkers, but it's also a tremendous amount of fun. So, and again, speaking in general terms, you have a number of companies with a de facto architecture. What's your advice or what's your plan as chief scientist officer to be that consciousness to say, hey, you know, we know all of these changes are happening. We know there's tensions, very natural, normal human tensions because people are coming from different places. To create that space for, I don't want to call it future-proof, but future-looking technical architecture as a lever for this culture to reform over time. What's your advice on how to do that?
Well, I think the hypothesis that everybody wants to build something which is very good at the beginning. So they want really to succeed, and this is the base of what we want to do. We want to have a happy customer. We want to have a robust platforms and so on. So at the end, I think the first things is to really bring a kind of transparency. Transparency, it's like I said about what is the aspiration of everybody. And it's work, in fact, because it's often in the head of each individual. And for example, architecture is often not documented or an aspiration of the product. The vision of the product is not documented. So the first thing is to bring this transparency, and also bring also honesty in that, because we all have and it was the case for ESCO, there was some technical debt. I mean, things that you wanted to improve in order to scale a lot. For example, if it's on the scaling, for so you need to see what is lacking also, and often if you look at it, we don't lack everything the same, or we don't have everything the also the best on each topic. So at the end, it's there. So there is an active a way to actively define what we want to do in each of the team, and then also actively listen to what the other team are doing. So it's why, and there are different tools which can help on that. So, for example, in our first Telepo and ESCO, we made a kind of workshop, which is a hackathon, in order to work together on the topic, and that makes for people something really real. And by the way, two of the topics, we will actually do it 1 or 2 years later, which is the migration to Kubernetes, and we are exploring this virtual world way to collaborate. So, and there are perhaps other things that will come outside. So it's even a value on itself, but at the end, the beginning that where we actually forced to work together and in order to deliver more value.
All I remember about that hackathon is just a bunch of big guys chasing me down, throwing me on the floor, taking things that I had. Yeah, that was what an experience that was.
Yeah, that was really nice, really
That was my
nice.
just to paint the picture for people. Omri has the blessing, if you will, of living with his family and a pretty big, like, I guess, chateau in a lovely city in Belgium. And up there's a nice grassy area in the back, and they put up some tents, and they had, I don't know, how many people did you have there? Like 30 people for the hackathon over a couple of days. And it was what an incredible environment. People, they had built some IKEA beds down in the basement, and it was really a corporate camping. And what everyone got into it. It was just such a delight. And I remember there was, yeah, I forget exactly what it was, but one of my roles was to somehow give away some instructions or something. And you said, go hide up in the field. So then, of course, I did my Chris thing, and I decided, even when they found me, I decided to run away. But of course, they were on a timer, so they started chasing me around. So it was a lot of fun. And that was just kind of the environment that was created. And then they came up with some amazing ideas that now are being brought into production, as you shared. So one thing for people that might not be technical debt as a term, every day when you create products, digital or not, you make decisions. And sometimes you make decisions that are short-term cheating decisions, maybe, or short, like, this is good enough for now, I'll fix it later. Everyone makes those decisions every day in their life. In a digital product world, those decisions, as they continue to pile up, are called technical debt. And at a certain point, you got to pay back that debt, or things get bloated and slowed down and confusing, and bugs and issues start happening for your customer, and the cost goes up. Every organization has that. So this is the one thing I just wanted to clarify with technical debt. What sort of culture do you imagine can evolve from a engaging, interactive, open architectural dialogue? So like I guess, like, what would you wish for from an organization that, again, let's imagine five different places, five different groups of people, slightly different architectures coming together. And if you were going to consciously design that culture as much as you can, because this is a very human thing, so it has to emerge, what would you love that culture to feel like? How would you describe what you're seeking to create through that engagement?
The most important, and that is the trust between the people, the entities, the it's really important to get the point to have this trust, and you know, and it's selective work to get this trust. So the so and it's really important for the customer at the end, because it's really show it shows up in the product at the end, that there is a trust, that there is some more resource that at the end, because we trust each other in order to use the skills of the other also. So I remember, I don't know, I think it was in a D4SP leadership meeting, there was really this advice that we need to be also ready to ask to get something from the other. So and I think it's quite important, because at the end we can do that. We can just ask at a certain time in order to make the things better. And there are really people overhauled all these five different places, which have more skills, which have more focus on certain areas than what we have. So we need to be ready to ask, and it's important in the trust that you are confronted to people which ask or something from the other, because then you can go to a conversation which is more detailed also, because you are not on the high level, and yeah, we will make this architecture, and it is the challenge to go to the pain point and to go deeply in what are the things that is not good at the end, and that we need to really make better together, or have a focus, or yeah.
Trust and vulnerability, meaning let's fixate on technical debt. Again, every organization has it by definition. If an organization doesn't have technical debt, then they're dead, because they will have spent so much money solving everything, and no organization has ever solved anything, I hope. What a boring place that would be. But in order to share with someone the ugly stuff in the basement, you have to have this level of trust. Like, you know what? That stuff down there is a big pile of shit, and it's you know, we're keeping it together with bubble gum and band-aids. And I think every corner of a large organization's got that, just because that, you know, that's how investments have been made. But to be able to share that openly and vulnerably, and then ask and say, you know, I think what you've got could actually help us out here a lot. But in order to have that conversation, there has to be an incredible amount of openness and trust and vulnerability. And that takes time. That takes time. Really nice. So, a lot of people, when they talk about technical architecture, refer to diagrams and documents and things. What, when you're talking about technical architecture, as a deliberate, conscious decision, not an unwritten de facto, what would you recommend is, like, how do people communicate a technical architecture so it's clear enough that people can make decisions, ideally autonomously as possible, or know when they need to engage and collaborate? What's your vision on a good way to communicate a technical architecture so it can inspire that trusting culture?
Yeah, what we tried, I don't know if it's the best one, but at least the beginning of
Well,
this
I
is
said good. I
important.
didn't say best. I said good on
Yeah,
choice, because
yeah, yeah.
I don't know what the best is either. I'm just, what's a good
It's
way?
this 4S way. So you have first the contextual architecture, where you really focus on the why, and why you are doing stuff. What is the goal that you want to achieve, the pain that you resolve, and And then you what is the goal which needs to be solved by your architecture? And then you explain really what are your box, the different box that you have, which is the conceptual boxes, which we and explain how it fixes these pains that you discuss, because an architecture is it's a product increment somehow in the agile way of working. So it's like a bit of a product also. So you need to say the why and the pain that it's also not going too much in the detail. So this is the first layer. I think it's really important. It's also there that you express the intention which are behind, because this will be very important in the culture aspects these teams, they have this intention and they really want to do that. This is their they want to focus, and the product which is made is in order to do that also. And after that, you are going to a more high level architecture, so where you define a bit the type of protocols between each of these box, and how does it talk each other. So that's really on the protocol side. You will express also some certain call flow for the main user story, how this architecture is used, in order to really concretely explain that it solves certain use case on scalability side, and depends of what is the focus of the aim of the architecture, what are the basic use case. After that you can dig in more details, but it's already very good if you get what is the intention and what are the basic boxes and what is the persona which will enjoy to use it. After that, there is really a lot of all the things that you see in a due diligence. Typically, this is another way to see it. So how do you take care of the quality? How do you take care of the security? How do you take care of the provisioning, the billing, the invoicing? And I can list a list of questions and ask yourself in order to dig in certain of all of this detail, because at the end, this makes the also the product working A to Z, I would say. But it's not the most important. It's important, but it's not the most important. The most important is to get the intention, the why we do things like that, and what are the benefits.
Well, I was triggered by the architecture as a product. And I can imagine maybe the chief scientist officer is the consciousness of the architecture by and by looking at it as a product. So maybe it has a backlog of itself because the architecture is continuously to be updated. So that would be fun if there's a, every sprint or so that there's improvements or enhancements to the architecture through dialogue and through discussion. So the and what also resonated with me is making it visible and defined. I think it also gives people a language in which to talk about it. So you mentioned I guess the boxes or some sort of domains in the architecture. And if you give a language to the humans that they know what they're talking about, because a lot of times people come from different places with the same definitions or different definitions for the same words. And again, it takes a while to like, wait, I don't think you're talking about what I'm talking about. And you can, I don't know if you can accelerate that, but you can facilitate that by create, giving them a language and onboarding people into language. And this is, you mentioned 4S. This is the different layers or different concepts. And for me, the goal is to bring people to the point of tension in a safe way as quickly as possible, because there's probably a lot that they will agree on to say, hey, if our goal is this, and we're going to, you know, build this product for this macro definition of a customer, and these are the different go-to-markets, and these are the different channels, and this needs to be now instead of individual solutions, this needs to be a platform structure solution, and we're going to separate the duties through the layers in this sort of way, which are all pretty standard ways of slicing the world up. Then people would go, all right, yeah, you know, okay, this is, and this is where my service would play and how it would interact. And this is, you know, who would consume it and what the contracts are. I think generally people will come together pretty closely on those abstract concepts, but the tension is really in the detail of, wait a second. You know, I thought my service was in control of that. That was my data. And someone else in the landscape is messing up my data, you know, and that's where it gets really real, really fast. And what I find is, if you can confront people with those real tensions quickly, and then have a way of discussing those real tensions quickly, then decisions can be made faster. That's my thought.
Yeah, I totally agree. This is really why I say that it's important to be able to ask something to, because then you to the other, because then you go to this deep detail. If you keep the dialogue on really the unique selling points of your legacy companies, it will not happen. It will really not happen. It will not be fun, because you will continue to have overloaded in each. You need to go in that detail so that we can really master more what we want to achieve all together. And everybody wants to go to a really DevOps cloud operator platform using, for almost everybody, Kubernetes, and everybody dreams about that. But we can do it together, because it's a lot of effort even to get the knowledge and have the luck to have the people which have this knowledge and can teach you more quickly than you have to do it by yourself. It's really an opportunity, but we need to. For example, Telepo was really better than us and show how to do it. You need to say, yeah, but and we made a kind of Kubernetes in a school. We had to drop this to say, yeah, but it's not the industry standard. Now we see the industry standard, and we are moving to that, because if not, we will have to support this, which is not the standard, and so on. So we need to go to that level of optimization, I would say. But it's painful discussion, because you work so much on that, and you were so much the first to use Linux container, for example, in that example, and you say no, you have to migrate. So
again, Kubernetes, you'll be able to explain it better than I can, but Kubernetes is a platform technology that allows to basically virtualize everything that used to be servers, and you can spin them up with code. It's all code defined. Now, I want to underline something that Amrita just said very passively. Before Kubernetes existed, they had already built something that featured or that functioned as Kubernetes. And so this is, I think, the magic of Amrita, and the fact that they have, I think, selected a perfect person for their chief scientist officer to have that kind of vision and awareness. But it then becomes technical debt at a certain point to make this whole conversation circle that, okay, you do something, you build it rather than buy it. And in that case, it didn't exist, so you couldn't buy it or use it. So you built it, it got you where you needed to go. And then the industry overtakes you. And now you're like, oh, darn, now we have technical debt. Was something that used to be really, really cool. And again, the whole process of kill your darlings and where's the architecture going, how are you going to discuss it, boom. And this is the never-ending cycle, the joyful cycle of creating digital products. So
yeah, and it's really improvement at the end, because We should be happy that we can remove a complete set of that we don't have to maintain that anymore. So, but if we had, that's true. It helps us a lot and make it our scalability different in the market for a full feature set, unified communication. So it was really great. And the underlying layers, which are containers, is still the same. But yeah, it's really a complete product for cloud management right now with Kubernetes, which is very good.
Great. Amri, thank you so much. If people want to learn more about the products you're building, you can look them up at Destiny, DSTNY.com. And they make products for service providers. That's the organization that Amri works with. And in a number of European countries, they also sell directly to small, mid-sized businesses. So you can buy the technology directly. And you can find all that on DSTNY.com. And if you want to get in touch with Amri, I'll put his LinkedIn account link in the show notes, and you can get in touch with him then. So, Amri, thank you so much for sharing as the new Chief Scientist Officer of Destiny, the story and the wisdom behind architecture drives culture. Amri, thank you so much.
Thank you all.
Thank you for listening. Visit ebullient.com to download the Simple Business Design Framework. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast on your favorite player.